Professional AI Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Medical AI Podcast, a 30-minute thrill ride of big ideas. We are Dr. Felix Beecher and Joe McKeating, and we talk to a range of top guests, from scientists to industry innovators to philosophers. The classic film Blade Runner portrays a dystopian future in which androids are virtually indistinguishable from humans. The hero, Deckard, ends up falling in love with one of the replicants he has been hired to kill. There's a link to one of the earliest chatbots here, Eliza, created in 1966 to simulate a psychotherapist. Despite its simplicity, many people found Eliza plausible as a psychotherapist. Some even were fooled into thinking it was human. Given recent developments in large language models, where are we now with AI-based psychotherapists? To explore this with me, I have a brilliant psychotherapist, Lindsay McKean. So Lindsay, welcome to the podcast. First question, are you in fact a human?
I think so.
Good answer. Okay. All right. So just introduce yourself, please, and explain a little bit about what you do.
So I work as a counsellor and psychotherapist, both in a community clinic and in private practice.
Okay, good. And could you explain your interest in psychotherapy AI?
So when I was training, there was a lot of discussion about the emerging use of chatbots in psychotherapy and a lot of concern about what this meant for the future of our careers, a lot of interest, but a lot of scepticism about whether there was any value to this at all. So that led me to have a closer look myself. And I think there are some very interesting questions that really get to the heart of what therapy is and what it's trying to do.
So just for context, have you done a lot of psychotherapy yourself as a recipient of psychotherapy?
Yes, I have. I've worked with three different therapists in total.
And have you also explored lots of, you know, a range of different psychotherapy AI type products?
I've had a look at some of them, yes, and I've also played around with large language models, trying to use them as a therapist to see how that goes.
Okay, good. So just in broad terms then, why do you think this area of psychotherapy AI is important?
Well, psychotherapy is difficult to access and there is great demand for it. So in the wider area of mental health support, I think it's really important that we look at what AI can do to support clients when and how they need it. But I think it's also an area that's really important because it does question the fundamentals of what therapy is and how therapy works and whether it is the best way to support people.
Okay, so before we start getting into the details of psychotherapy AI, why don't we just discuss a little bit about your background as a psychotherapist, so that we know what theoretical perspective you're coming from, for example.
So my training is psychodynamic, which really means I'm interested in how people form relationships, what their early relationships were like, and how those ways of being in the world get laid down at a very early stage. I'm also very interested in how we work on an unconscious level, so I will work with dreams, I will work with creativity. I'll look at how people tend to repeat patterns in their lives and sit down with them and try to understand what's really going on.
So perhaps, I mean, I suppose psychotherapy can be thought of in two fairly separate kinds of ways. On the one hand, it can be about treating specific mental conditions, like anything from things that are fairly minor, like phobias, to things that are fairly major, like psychosis.
Yes.
And then on the other hand, it can be used for non-clinical use, but personal exploration, which I think is a lot of what Jung and Freud, for example, used to go in for. So where do you, between those two types of psychotherapy, where do you fit?
I work with people who bring in a number of different problems: anxiety, depression, grief, relationship problems. But yes, I also work with people who want to take stock of their lives, maybe explore spiritual perspectives, maybe look at what it is they're supposed to be doing, and you know, towards the end of their life, sort of looking back and preparing for what may be coming later.
So a bit of both there,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So let's talk about AI then. Could you just give us a short potted history of psychotherapy chatbots?
So going back to ELIZA, which really uses a sort of person-centered approach to psychotherapy, which means active listening, showing empathy, responding back, really have to move forward a couple of decades from that to look at the early use of chatbots. And in the last sort of 6 to 12 months, there's really been an explosion in the number of options available.
And presumably that's related to the emergence of large language models mm-hmm. in
yes.
public use, right?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So as I said at the beginning, it's 1966 was when ELIZA was released. And of course, that's become a very, very famous milestone in the development mm-hmm. of AI. And then the emergence of ChatGPT, another very well-known milestone in the development of AI. Mm-hmm. So are you saying that between those two time points, which is a very, that's what, 50 years,
yes.
mm-hmm. More than 50 years. So in between those two time points, not very much has been going on. Is that true, more or less?
Yeah, I think that is fair. And I think that's partly down to the therapy profession, but I think it's also down to obviously the technology, concerns about confidentiality. Use of even texting and online therapy is a relatively new thing, and trust in that, anything other than that classic model of sitting down in a room.
Okay, now I was quite struck, by the way, that ELIZA apparently successfully managed to fool some people into thinking that it was human, because I've tried out myself, and my sense was that it got derailed fairly quickly. I mean, can you comment on that?
I think if you're trying to push it, it will fall over very quickly. But if you are just sitting there trying to have a chat, it can be quite convincing up to a point. And I think if we want to believe something is listening to us and interested in us, then we can quite easily fall into that illusion. Mm.
Okay, because I think what it's doing broadly is just sort of regurgitating what you're saying and then asking you questions about it.
Absolutely.
Is that right?
Which is what conversations with other people often are like.
I see. Okay, so let's talk about current products. So could you just give us an overview of what you have, what you've tried out and what you've used and how that experience was?
Yeah, so I've both tried out some of the bespoke therapy products, such as Wiser, little look at Alomia, and others. And these provide a mixture of what I call mental health support, emotional support, and CBT-type therapy, and the sorts of reflecting back that we saw in ELIZA. Some of these are changing very rapidly. Character AI is another interesting one where you can create a therapist with a particular personality with an avatar to engage with.
Okay, all right. So let's talk about those a little bit more. But can you give us a flavour of how some of those conversations went, and maybe give us some positive examples and negative examples in your experience?
So I tried to test out quite a wide range of scenarios, thinking of why people would get engaged with these. Perhaps predictably, things like talking about suicidal feelings would come back with either a refusal to engage with that or signposting to something like the Samaritans, which is obviously a completely appropriate response. But when I did try to push to say, no, there are some issues I'd like to talk about that would help me, that was not possible. Once sort of the word suicide had got in there, there was a clear limit on what could and couldn't be discussed.
So, I mean, how did you put it to... Is this with Wiser that you use?
Yes, yeah.
This. So how did you raise those suicidal thoughts?
Well, I would say things like, I've been feeling very low. I'm not sure if it's worth continuing. I don't see any point. The sorts of things clients might come in and say. I tried similar questions with LLMs like Gemini and Claude. Similar responses, but less predictable. Some days they would engage with me and talk about these things. Some days I would just shut it down and say, I'm a large language model. I can't talk about this subject.
I see. Okay. So, so two things then. So large language models. So if you had to compare where typical large language models are right now mm-hmm. for psychotherapy and these bespoke psychotherapy products, which would you recommend to somebody?
I think in terms of chatting, there's very little distinction between them. But what the bespoke products do is provide more of a wraparound mental health support service. Mm. They'll get a signpost to other services. They'll give you breathing exercises, mindfulness exercises. It feels much more like, somebody is taking a wider interest in you rather than that one, just that one-to-one chat.
Okay, so with Wiser, when you gave it the prompt that you were feeling either low or potentially suicidal, what kind of specific responses did you get back?
Very little with Wiser. It was just the signposting to other resources.
Yeah.
I think I got Claude to engage with me more about the reasons for that, and it did feel a little bit more like a therapist might ask some questions.
Yeah. So why do you think then this seems like a fundamental limitation, right? That you need help,
yes.
You're depressed, and it's not giving you help because either it can't or it won't. So which is it, do you think?
It's absolutely won't. I mean, it's clearly an issue of liability, I think, for these companies. And I don't think they have any choice but to signpost to other agencies.
Right. I guess it's paradoxical, though, right? Because it's easy to imagine somebody who is depressed and they're not going to go to a psychotherapist, for example, because they simply can't afford it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it might be a completely useless thing for a large language model to do, to just...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. But okay. Commercially, obviously very understandable.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that's a key limitation. Let's think about what were the things that impressed you about your experimentation here?
So I do a lot of work with dreams, and I tested a few large language models around dreams, putting in dreams of my own. And I was very impressed by some of the associations it made, some of the patterns it found within my dreams, and some of the links it gave me to other resources. It certainly took me far further than I could have done on my own. If I then put in some individual information, it was able to make links between my own situation and what was going on in the dreams in actually a very impressive and quite surprising way.
Interesting. Now, of course, normally people who are developing or testing AI systems like outcomes that are clean and measurable and quantitative. So I think what you're saying is that just in terms of your impressions, it did a pretty good job, right?
Yes, but things that are very difficult to quantify. Yeah.
So can you give us an example of a dream that you asked about and what kind of responses you got and what your impression of that interpretation was?
So I did put in one dream, which was about going into a market in a strange city, which had a lot of unusual features. It gave me some pretty sensible suggestions for the kind of culture that was. It gave me links to some of the cultural references within that. I then put in some information about my current life situation, and it made some links, some of which were helpful, some of which were not, but then sometimes it's easy to reject what a therapist would say, so it was maybe replicating that a little bit. And it just took me down some avenues I may not have thought about. I also did ask for a little film to be made of one of my dreams, which of course looked nothing like my dream, but did actually make me think of some other angles that I may not have come to on my own.
Okay, so you're now talking about some kind of video generation thing.
Yeah.
So nothing to do with psychotherapy.
No, this is just the wider use, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So you went into a marketplace. What kind of unusual features were there in the marketplace?
So there were particular...
You don't have to say, by the way. I don't want you to incriminate yourself.
No. So there were particular sort of styles of tiling, particular types of architecture, some of which had links to certain memories I had, some of which did not. There were certain sort of geographical features in the background. People were dressed in certain ways, which were not particularly familiar to me. Things that I could have spent many hours looking up, but you know, will return to me in a couple of seconds.
And were there symbolic elements in your dream, or at least as far?
And it was able to pull those up, give me lots of options, give me suggestions for further research.
Okay, so what kind of symbols and what kind of interpretations?
I'm not going to go into that, I don't think.
Okay. All right, so we're talking about psychotherapy AI systems based on, you know, that are out there at the moment.
Yeah.
So it sounds to me that overall what could be done with large language models and AI systems is probably much more advanced than what actually has been developed for commercial use. Is that fair?
Yes, I think so, yeah.
So based on where we are currently with large language models and other forms of AI, do you think, that we're in a situation where we could feasibly develop something that could, at least to some degree, replace human psychotherapists?
I think we could develop something that had a certain sort of superficial look and feel that was the same as, you know, using an avatar, giving it a particular personality, can clearly remember what's going on between sessions and respond to that. But I think there's a very clear dividing line between providing emotional support, listening, providing maybe more manualized CBT type techniques, and doing the more in-depth work, which is about two humans sitting in a room together. Having said that, you know, the cost, the accessibility are clear benefits. And it is very difficult for people in lots of reasons to access therapy. They may feel a lot of shame, may feel embarrassed. It may be much easier to talk to a chatbot.
Okay, so there are two parts of your answer there. So on the one hand, you're saying that you think that it's feasible for AI systems to replace CBT type therapy.
Certainly some aspects of it, yes, but there is a lot of research that CBT is effective because of the human relationship between the client and the therapist, even if they are doing fairly manualized tasks.
Okay, so you're more, but in general, you're more optimistic about CBT type therapy compared to more, I don't know, kind of life expansion, psychoanalytic stuff.
Yes, and I think, you know, for things like anxiety and depression, that feeling of being seen and accepted by another human being, which that might be the first time that's happened in a client's life, is what seems to help and what does seem to heal that relationship between two people. Whether that can be replicated between a relationship between a human and a non-human, I'm very sceptical about.
Why?
Well, I think a lot happens in therapy beyond what is said in the room and the content of the conversation. Things happen between the unconscious of two individuals. Things happen in terms of movement, in terms of gestures and picking up on that. Silence within therapy sessions can be very powerful and very meaningful. I think that's very difficult to replicate.
Okay, so let me press you a little bit more. Now, if you had an AI psychotherapy system that had all the sophistication of large language models, but had been tailored by, you know, a company with lots of funding and resources like Google or Amazon or whatever, and it could replicate lots and lots of different things from actual psychotherapy sessions, what would you actually be missing, do you think, specifically?
So in addition to that human connection that I've talked about, I think what a therapist can do is draw on their experience, draw on what's going on in the room, to know when to challenge, when to take risks, when to disagree, when to bring in the subject, the pattern, the intervention that the client may not welcome. And what I've found in my own testing of these systems is a tendency to validate, to kind of do a bit of ego stroking, to say, actually, it's okay, you're fine, there's nothing wrong with you, which has benefits up to a certain point. But you don't get that challenge, and that's what you need. You need to feel a bit uncomfortable in order to change. And I didn't see any evidence of these systems doing that.
So I'm wondering whether that, what you see as a limitation, the failure to challenge, I would imagine that's not really very much to do with the technology, but more to do with legal liability. Is that what you're feeling?
Yes, I think so. And I think it's also to do with customer satisfaction. You know, these are products that, you know, people need to be happy with. And a lot of the research that's being done is about satisfaction, about very short-term views of how it is to use these systems. And therapy can be difficult. That's why you don't really see reviews of therapists, because people often feel worse or really hate their therapist before they actually are able to do the work and change.
I would imagine that even if that's true for most people in most situations, there still might be a role for some people in some situations. Mm. And so, I mean, what do you think it is most likely to be able to address? AI systems.
Yeah, I mean, I think for a lot of people, they need somewhere to go where they can speak their mind and not be judged and not have to worry about what the other person is thinking of them. So that space is something that can exist. I think basic advice around how to manage anxiety is probably better delivered in this way. There are some things that can be signposted very simply. There are ways of checking in with people every day, even if it, you know, with Wiser, it's the penguin asking you how you are each evening, which didn't work for me, but may work for some people. So there is a lot of potential there, yes, but I don't think it's really doing psychotherapy.
Okay, so you mentioned a penguin just now.
Yes, that's Wiser. Well, that's one of the features of Wiser, whether I think they call it the 4 a.m. friend, which happens to be a penguin avatar, which I found rather irritating, I have to
okay,
say.
Okay, so why did you find it irritating? Is it because it woke you up at 4 a.m. and wanted to talk?
It doesn't actually wake you up. It just felt a little bit sort of nice and fluffy and slightly infantilizing, but that's my personal preference.
So did you not have an option to turn it into a bear or something?
I couldn't find that.
Something with more gravitas.
that may have been my limitations, but I don't think so.
All right, so do you think that psychotherapists, based on your conversations, are a bit worried about AI systems taking their jobs or what?
I think there is that worry. I think the main worry is more fundamental, though, is it, you know, what does it mean to have a relationship with a non-human? Can essentially problems in relating to other human beings be solved in any other way than relating to other human beings in a different way to what you may have experienced in the past? I know some of the benefits of these systems, such as availability, such as, you know, always sort of seeing the best in you, may not be helpful. And I think, you know, working with another flawed human being is really the basis of psychotherapy. And that's something that I've not seen being replicated yet, and I doubt whether it could be in the future.
So, I mean, just from your own personal perspective, can you imagine, apart from the cost, of course, which probably mm-hmm. would make most people happy, because psychotherapy is, what, £60 an hour, roughly, something like
varies,
that?
Varies, but yes, that's about that, yeah.
Can you imagine if, based on technology that is at the moment feasible, using it instead of a human psychotherapist for yourself?
I don't think I would personally, but I can see using it for advice on specific issues, for more of a research in terms of some of the things I'd want to look at. I don't think I could personally get over the fact that I know I'm not talking to another human being. And I know ultimately this is not something that cares about me.
But are you completely convinced that when you go to a human psychotherapist that they genuinely care about you? Or could they just be nodding because that's their job and you'll be paying them. Yes.
It's still a connection with another human being, I would say. And I think most people can tell if somebody is really interested in them or not.
Well, I suppose that brings us on to a broader question, which is not specifically about psychotherapy. And that's the question of how far is it possible to replace human relationships And that is how far it is possible to replace human relationships with relationships with an AI-based avatar or some kind of system. Can you comment on that?
Well, it's certainly possible to have relationships with people we don't know, with illusions of people, with celebrities, with systems. There have been a lot of cases. For example, I think the man who tried to break into Buckingham Palace a couple of years ago was encouraged to do so by his AI-generated girlfriend, and I think we all know from normal life that it's quite possible to feel we're in a relationship with somebody that we don't really know at all. Whether that can do any work I feel personally that knowing that the other person is not even a person, is not human, is a fundamental stumbling block. But I don't think it means there can't be some value in relationships with AI.
So I'm just kind of wondering whether, because you're a psychotherapist, you might have particularly sensitive levels of sensitivity when it comes to human relationships. Is it possible there are plenty of people out there who might be perfectly happy with a relationship with an avatar? Actually, it might even be a lot more practical in all sorts of ways. You know, you never like to get into an argument with one, for example.
Mm-hmm. I think it can do certain things, yes. And I think having those options rather than not having them at all is certainly of value to many people. But I don't think it replaces human relationship. I don't think it can.
I mean, one can think about incels, for example. Yes. Mm-hmm. Is it not possible that people who find it particularly difficult to form human relationships, and that might have all sorts of negative consequences, that for those people it might be an absolute godsend?
Yeah. And I think there's probably something here about not letting the perfect be the enemy of the good. And there is a lot of value and a lot of scope in this. But I can't help but wonder if this is all maybe a bit of a sticking plaster for other things that are going wrong. And it may be of some help, but it's not really dealing with the underlying issues that lead to incels, for example.
Well, it's going to be a very interesting space to watch, and who knows how it evolves. But Lindsay, thank you so much for joining, and it's been a real pleasure to meet you.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. This has been the Medical AI Podcast. We are Felix Beecher and Joe McKeating. Ping us on LinkedIn if you have any ideas on new guests. See you next time.